Somalia is facing its worst drought in four decades. The United Nations is warning more than half of its people are at risk of severe hunger or starvation this year. So can Somalia avert famine? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Derin Abugeda. The Horn of Africa region is facing its driest conditions in decades after three consecutive rainy seasons failed. Aid agencies say only a tiny fraction of the funds needed for food assistance has been raised as the world focuses on the humanitarian crisis in Ukraine. And further complicating the response is the political and security situation. Al-Shabaab has been stepping up attacks while the government's been paralyzed by a dispute between the president and prime minister. We'll have our panel shortly, but first, Malcolm Webb reports from southern Somalia. Just a warning, some viewers may find the images in Malcolm's report disturbing.
This is what Somalia's drought has done to this three-year-old boy. His father, Abdullahi Abdi Mohammed, was a farmer until all his crops died. Last month, they joined hundreds of thousands of people who were leaving their homes for makeshift camps. But there wasn't enough food or water in the camp either.
I left my wife in the camp. She was also sick. I have been here for 14 days with my son in the hospital, and he is slowly making recovery day after day.
The UN says more than a million children are malnourished, a third of them severely, after the last three rainy seasons failed. Crops and animals have been wiped out. Children are among the most vulnerable. The luckier ones get medical help. Across southern Somalia, therapeutic feeding centres are full, like this one in the town of Luk. Somalia's had famines before. Dr. Shukri Hussein Abdi says she's never seen anything like this. She works here for the Irish charity Trocare.
This drought is more serious than other droughts in Somalia. Because when we see the admitted patients before other years, according to the registers and data, we saw this is more severe than the others.
Most people here herded animals and grew crops on the banks of the rivers until they dried up.
This goat was somebody's means to survival. The livestock can eat what little grows on the thorny bushes and turn it into milk, meat and income. Now carcasses are scattering this whole area. People say first the crops died. When the animals died too, they had no choice but to walk here to the edge of the town and set up a camp.
People use what they can to shelter from the dust and the sun. Conditions aren't good. Many children here need help, but humanitarian agencies say they have less than 3% of the money they need. Any help is too late for Ahado Daro Isaac's daughter and her four grandchildren, who she says all died on the way here.
The children died while we were walking. We did not have any kind of transport. If only we had transport, they would have survived. We could not get food or water, so they could not walk. That's why they died.
Nobody's even counted how many malnourished children have already died. The next rains are due in April. Help is needed now. Malcolm Webb, Al Jazeera, southern Somalia.
Let's now bring in our guest. Joining us from Kismayo is Mursal Mohammed Khalif. He's the Minister of Planning and International Cooperation in Somalia's semi-autonomous region of Jubaland. From Washington, D.C., Hodan Ali, a nurse practitioner who's a senior advisor to the mayor of Mogadishu. And from Maputo in Mozambique, Omar Mahmoud, who's a senior Eastern Africa analyst at the International Crisis Group. Welcome to Inside Story. Thanks very much for your time with us. Mursal Mohammed Khalif, if I may start with you, tell us what you're seeing where you are in terms of the people suffering because of food and water scarcity as a result of the drought.
Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. This is one of the longest running droughts in recent memory. And it's on its path to parallel or surpass the drought of 2011. It is a national tragedy affecting all parts of Somalia, but specifically in Jubaland state of Somalia, is one of the hardest hit areas. As you may know, Jubaland state is the state of the federal member state of Somalia, which borders Kenya. The drought initially started in northeastern parts of Kenya, where it has affected the livestock and the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of people who have crossed this porous border into Jubaland state. And from June, July last year until now, we've been ringing the alarm bells for the national government and for the international community that that we will see not only livestock lost, but people lost.
We'll talk about the international response and the national government's response in a moment. But first, just to kind of continue what you're saying, break it down for us and tell us what this means for people on a day-to-day basis from what you're seeing.
Well, what it means for people on a day-to-day basis at the moment is that hundreds of thousands of families have been uprooted after losing the livestock in which they depended for their livelihoods. And as a result, now we are seeing people losing their lives because of lack of water and lack of other food. From districts as far as Bardere, Gerbahare, Elwak, Doble, Afmedu, Badade, we're seeing people's report, we're getting reports and witnessing young children and mothers' lives being lost on a daily basis now for the third week in a row.
Okay. Hodan Ali, let me bring you in from Washington, D.C., because I saw you nodding along with my guest from Kismayo, and he was saying this drought is, in fact, worse than the ones in the recent past in 2011 as well as 2017. You agree with that statement. Tell us what you've been hearing.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I just returned from the region, and really what Mursal has said is on point. We have about nearly half the country facing acute hunger, about 4.5 million people, 350,000 children are malnutritioned. We have reports of measles outbreaks and already people dying of starvation and thirst. We've got over nearly 2 million livestock that have been lost. As you know, Somalia and Somalis are dependent on the pasture agricultural part of their livelihoods. And that has been nearly wiped out. You know, consecutive rain failures for nearly three decades, and particularly in the last 5 years, has really culminated to this. We're looking at the worst humanitarian crisis that country has seen. In 2011, which really became a famine, and we've lost nearly 300,000 children. This will actually dwarf those numbers if we do not respond effectively and immediately.
Okay, here's the thing. In 2011, Hodan Ali, it was declared a famine, and that was based on a combination of factors such as consecutive droughts, high global and domestic food prices, poor local grain harvest. What's different this time around? Because we keep hearing that Somalia is on the verge of famine, but it hasn't been declared as a famine just yet.
Well, we haven't seen the massive deaths that we've seen yet, right? And we will see. But what's worse this time is that, in fact, our government has been really falling behind in terms of the response. We've been caught up in 2 years of elections. We have a political crisis in the country that has completely distracted both local and international attention. We've got the issues going on globally with Ukraine and all of that that has really directed attention. But in terms of declaring a famine, it's about numbers of lives that have been lost or are on the verge of loss. As of right now, I think the problem is, that there isn't a coherence in an understanding in terms of the devastation that is about to ensue. And until and unless we really get our acts together and declare Somalia really in the critical crisis that it's in, whether it fits the definition of famine or not,
okay,
as of yet.
Yeah, just really one more for you. Just one more for you on this issue before I move on to my guest from Mozambique. But because when we look at 2011, the definition of famine, or the term famine, in fact, was declared in July. But research seems to suggest that it had likely started in March or April. And as a result of that, there was a delay in the humanitarian assistance to Somalia. Is there a risk that that scenario is being repeated right now?
Absolutely. And I think we're going to see a lot more devastation if we don't, for the international community, doesn't, in fact, declare Somalia famine at this point because of the multiple crises. In fact, we might be actually in worse state than we were July 2011, which was already too late at that point. So I think it really behooves the international community to move along this line and get Somalia's government to do its job as well.
Okay. Omar, Mahmoud, thanks so much for just being patient while we got through that. Tell us what you're seeing in terms of the response by the international community to the situation in Somalia. Is it enough?
Well, I think what the previous guest mentioned in terms of the different global climate we are in right now compared to these previous shocks we've seen over the past decade in Somalia. Obviously, you have a war in Ukraine right now that is distracting a lot of attention. But even if you look at the Horn of Africa, there's multiple other flashpoints, there's multiple other priorities that have really pushed Somalia, I think, quite down a bit compared to what it was before. And so the funding appeals are much lower. I think only 3% has been funded to date, which is quite a dire situation. And at the same time, while there has been some you know, attention and focus on this, you know, Somalia is in the midst of this ongoing electoral process that's been going on for over a year, well over time, which I think also complicates kind of the coordination and mushrooming of a more coherent response.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, in fact, because you're right in saying that the humanitarian response is only 3% funded. From what you're seeing in the work that you do, are international donors discouraged due to the internal political situation and the unrest in the country?
Well, I think there's a level of fatigue that has set in on Somalia probably over the past couple years. Again, some of this is distracted priorities as other hotspots have emerged in the Horn of Africa, but part of it is a frustration with progress over the past few years, especially with this electoral cycle, which has proved so difficult, so prolonged. I mean, you know, you have a government that technically whose constitutional mandate expired over a year ago, and even in the lead up to that, the discussions were very intense around the election. So you have a lot of attention and political capital going into those dynamics, which for, I think, some international partners is misdirected. You know, it's directed towards internal politics rather than towards crucial needs, whether it's security or humanitarian relief.
All right, let's get Marcel's take on this. I mean, to what extent do you think the political crisis that's been taking place since last year, in fact, is complicating the response to the drought and the food crisis?
Absolutely. The parties that would have collaborated nationally to respond to this crisis are dealing with the longest political crisis in recent Somali history, with an election, federal level election, that has not taken place for over a year and a half. The process started 8-9 months ago, and it still keeps on dragging. That certainly affects, and those 8 or 9 months since the upper house elections have started is when the drought has started affecting certain regions. The international community's response is also dismal. Part of it may be their focus on the political situation on the ground here in Somalia. Other part may be other global crisis such as the recent Ukraine, although I don't think that has much of an effect yet. This drought has been going on for months. But in Jubaland, another obstacle that we are facing, that we have constantly been trying to figure out, is that the federal government is holding control of one of the three regions of Jubaland, most of that region, Gedo, which has been affected by the drought. Officials from Jubaland, such as myself, the other cabinet members, have not been allowed to even assist or respond to or assess the gravity of the situation on the ground. We've been relying on third-party reports and NGOs on the ground, and it's all because of the Farmajo regime's
what do you mean? Allow me. What do you mean you're not allowed to assist? What does that mean? Your officials on the ground, how does that even happen?
Well, this is one of the little-known facts about the political turmoil in Somalia. The Farmajo regime has started taking over by force with national forces parts of Jubaland State back in 2020, early 2020. And the international community has been silent on that. And that has created a culture of clash within the state where our national government and its leadership have been trying to sow conflict between the communities within the Jubaland State. And explaining the history of it may be long, but
I mean, these are claims that we'll certainly have to put to the government. But let's just stay on topic for the moment and bring in Hodan Ali. From what you've seen, how would you evaluate the government's response to this crisis? And Hodan, does the government actually have a plan to deal with the drought and the hunger crisis besides relying on international aid?
Actually, the government response has been a dismal failure. It's unfortunate that 4.5 million Somalis are on the verge of acute hunger, bordering famine, and we have yet mobilized a coherent response on this. And this is, squarely on the feet of the office of the Prime Minister, who's now really the only legitimate government that we have. This failure, there has been a committee that has been appointed maybe a few weeks back. We have seen little delivery on that. We have seen little efforts in terms of raising funds and allocating funds to the crisis. The complete lack of attention to this issue, primarily because of the politics that my colleague Mursal has been mentioning, is the problem. I mean, the country has, the only thing that is being discussed is this politics. And the politics has been absolutely toxic to the point where even regular Somalis who've been in the past supportive of supporting Somalis in need, it's very difficult to even fundraise among Somalis because of the toxic culture that has been created. But as of right now, the only mandated government is the Office of the Prime Minister, and it needs to actually take this issue as a priority number one, rather than just focusing on the political dynamics of the country. We should be able to chew gum and walk at the same time. It is a government, and the responsibility falls on the government to make sure that the coordination happens and the fundraising efforts globally gets ramped up. At the moment, we're actually falling asleep on the wheel. And ultimately, the responsibility will fall on the Office of the Prime Minister. And I mean, obviously, we do have Farmajo still as the head of the head figure, and he has really spent zero time talking about this issue. So yes, there is a failure on behalf of the government, and I think that is what we're seeing take hold.
One more issue that we must address, of course, is the security situation with Omar Mahmoud and Al-Shabaab, who controls large parts of the country. I mean, from what you've been, I know you're not on the ground in Somalia, Omar, but from what you've been hearing and seeing, to what extent is the security situation hampering any sort of aid effort, if the aid effort were to even take place?
Yeah, well, I mean, the complicating factor is that Al-Shabaab is, in reality, the dominant security actor in large swaths of South and Central Somalia. And so in order to access those populations, I mean, you do have to go through the group at some level, or you wait for those populations to leave those areas under group control. And, in the past, we have seen some level of access to those populations through the group. This isn't often talked about or publicly acknowledged, but through intermediaries and some sorts of local negotiations, you do kind of have that. But that presents, one of the biggest challenges here. Some of the hardest hit, some of the, most rural areas are basically out of government control.
Right.
And so you see this as a challenge, not only for the government, but actually for the group itself, because you see the Al-Shabaab undertaking some response on its own, but you still see people kind of leaving their territories for government held areas in expectation of greater relief. So at the end of the day, you know, this could be an opportunity, perhaps, to kind of, you know, explore some sort of humanitarian dialogue with the group to say, look, you know, we can't have these populations suffering any more than they really need to do, you know, put politics aside for a second.
I mean, how likely do you think that is? And I wonder if you can just talk to us a little bit more about the specific challenges in working in these areas that are outside of government control.
Well, you know, I think we have seen some very limited and episodic instances of this in the past. You know, if you look at the response to 2011, al-Shabaab's response to that famine was actually quite disastrous, where they cut off aid and many, you know, hundreds of thousands of people died. And that really affected the group. If you look in 2017, they kind of undertook a bit of a different approach. So, you know, this is an actor that also realizes, you know, they can't follow the same patterns as well before. So I do think there is an opportunity there. It's a very delicate one. It's very complicated. But we see that at very localized levels happening at various times. You see movement going back and forth. But of course, you know, you can't really access these areas without basically going through al-Shabaab. You know, right now you have a situation where you have this rural-urban divide, essentially, where, you know, government forces and the African Union peacekeeping mission that backs them up are hunkered down in urban areas, some of these which are blockaded by al-Shabaab, so you can't even get supplies in and out. So it really is quite a challenge in terms of trying to reach those other populations. And if you wait for them all to come to you, as we heard on the opening segment, you know, many also suffer during that route.
Right. Marcel, what's at stake if this is all not addressed, the drought and the hunger crisis, and if it's not addressed right away?
The status is very dire. We are already at a critical juncture. We have started seeing people, vulnerable people, children, mothers, the elderly, lose their lives. Reports from all over Jubaland State and many other parts of Somalia, third week in a row already. If immediate assistance at the international level and national level does not reach many of these vulnerable communities immediately, we're only going to see the numbers rise. And unfortunately, it's not only numbers. These are real human beings who are losing their lives in a way that's avoidable.
Right.
The world can do better. Somalia can do better.
Okay. Hodan, final thoughts to you. What do you think needs to be done right away, and what are you calling on?
I think I call on the government to gear up a bit more and get organizing and really responding effectively and working with international communities to raise funds and support, but also focus on the Somali community, both at home and abroad, get the business sector involved and start the appeals to support, because the budget gaps are actually very significant. Less than 3%, to my knowledge, has been secured to respond to this crisis. But I also want to, you know, send a message to the international community that, you know, the UN mission in Somalia is that this, you know, approach to managing Somalia basically on a crisis-to-crisis mode, when there is nearly $2 billion that goes into the country annually, is something that needs to be addressed, because, you know, Somalia needs long, sustainable interventions on these issues. We know these are cyclical issues and they will get worse, and this humanitarian approach will not be helpful. But in terms of the overall, you know, government in political situation that is right now,
right,
I think, you know, Somalia across the board needs to refocus and make sure that we don't have hundreds of thousands of people dying in 2022 of hunger and thirst. And
okay,
that's really a testament of a government failure if that happens.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Mursel Mohammed Khalif, Hodan Ali and Omar Mahmoud, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is AJInsideStory from myself and the whole team here in Doha. Thanks very much for watching, and bye-bye for now.